starting here on the top of Daf Chav Beis Amud Aleph. The Gemara is going into a little segue. This is based on the Gemara yesterday, where the Gemara discussed a get that was written on an Ale Zayit that was found in an Atzitz Nakuv. Now the Gemara is going to deal with this issue of Atzitz Nakuv, that's a pot that has a hole in the bottom, and discuss what are exactly the status of this Atzitz Nakuv is. So the Gemara says, Atzitz Shalachad, if the pot belonged to the plant pot belonged to one person, this plant pot that had a hole in the bottom, Vezraim Shalacharin, inside this pot were planted seeds, and they belonged to somewhere else. Machar Balatzitz the Balazraim, if the owner of the pot, right, sold the pot to the Balazraim, Kemen Shemashach Kana, as soon as the person who owned the seeds makes a kinyan, kinyan meshicha means to pull it, or kinyan hagba to lift it up, right, then he acquires the pot. Machar bal zraim, the bal atzitz, on the other hand, if the owner of the seeds sold to the owner of the pot the seeds, lo kana ad sheyachzik bizraim, he won't be kona until he makes a chazaka on the seeds. Now, we'll just have to give a little background or explanation for this, that when it comes to property, real property, that's land and such, the only way to acquire it is through, there are three methodologies for acquiring real property, and that's shtar, chazaka, and kesef. Shtar means that I give a document of sale. Kesef is easy, I pay money for the field. And the last one is chazaka. Chazaka is how somehow I establish ownership over the field. That means either I do some work in the field, I hoe, or I make a fence around the field that establishes ownership for me. So in order to acquire real property, you need to have a kinyan that focuses on shtar, kesef, and chazaka. On the other hand, for non-real property, which in the Gemara zone is metaltalim, items that are able to be moved, then the kinyanim that are required there can be either a kinyanim like meshicha, means to pull it, hagbah, to lift it, or chalipin. These are methodologies for acquiring non-real property. So over here, the Gemara's assumption is that when I have this plant pot that has a hole in the bottom, and then I have seeds in the pot, that the pot itself is considered non-real property. It's considered metaltalim. Since it's considered metaltalim, it must require a kinyan in order to acquire it of metaltalim. What's the kinyan of metaltalim? So that's what Gemara says over here. If he does meshicha, he picks it up, he pulls it, or agba, if he lifts it up, that'll be a kinyan for this. On the other hand, the zroim, because there's a hole in the bottom of the pot, the dirt and the growth that's inside the pot is considered mechubar lekarka, is considered like part of the ground. Since it's considered part of the ground, the only way to acquire that is through a kinyan that works by real property. And that is kesef, shtar, v'chazaka. So that's what the Gemara mentioned. So this is what we just learned in the Gemara. If the pot, the owner of the pot wants to sell his pot to the owner of the seeds, then he sells his pot, he has to make a kinyan on metaltalim, a kinyan on non-real property. How do you do that? That's through meshicha. And that's what it says. If he does meshicha, he's kone. On the other hand, if the owner of the seeds wants to sell it to the owner of the pot, the seeds are karka. So the only way the owner of the pot can gain ownership over them is to do something that would work by real property. And that's what the Gemara says over here. He must do a chazaka. He makes a chazaka on these seeds. How does he do that? He works the pot a little bit. He changes. He does something that exerts ownership over those planted seeds. So now the Gemara continues. What happens? Atzitz v'zraim shalachat. If both the pot and the seeds belonged to a single individual, umachran le'acher, and then he sold them to a third party. Herzik v'zraim. If he makes a chazaka on the seeds, kana atzitz. Then he's also kona the potted plant along with it. Mizuhi sheshaninu. This is a principle that we have in other places. Nechashim she'en le'machariyut. Right? Property that does not, or possessions that do not have recourse associated with them, nickname, can be acquired im nechasim sheyesh lemachrayut. That can be acquired along with property that does have recourse to it, bekesef, uvishtar, uvichazaka. So generally the Gemara assumes that property or real property that is sold with recourse. Since, because in these cases where the property could be taken away if there's some sort of encumbrance on the property, it was generally sold with recourse, and therefore it was taken away by if the buyer had the land taken away by some of the creditors of the seller somehow, then the seller would have to reimburse the buyer for the property. So those are called nechasim sheish lemachrayut. On the other hand, metaltalin, generally movable property, was not sold with achrayut, with recourse, because generally people did not encumber those or did not make those liens, put in place liens on metaltalin, because since they can be moved and sold, right, it's much harder to ensure that your collateral remains intact. So there's a principle in the Gemara that if you acquire real property, if you acquire property that generally comes with recourse, then anything that's on that property can be, or things that are metaltalim, things that are not real property, can be acquired along with that property as long as you make a proper kinyan on the property. So for instance, if you have a piece of land and there's a barbecue sitting on that land, in order to acquire the land, you need to do a kinyan of kesef shtaru chazaka. Now the barbecue is metaltalim, it's something that's movable. Since it's movable, that would acquire a kinyan like hagbah, lifting up, or mashicha, or pulling it. But if one buys the property and the barbecue is on top of the property, then one can acquire the barbecue through acquiring the property. If I acquire the property, I can then acquire the barbecue along with the property. That is, the idea here that you can acquire nechasim she'en lemechareyut, you can acquire property that does not have recourse with property that does have recourse. So I can acquire the barbecue along with the land, as long as the owner says that they can acquire the barbecue along with the acquisition of the land. And that's what's happening over here too. Person owns the pot, and he owns the seeds. The seeds are considered like real property, and the pot is metaltalin. So therefore, if he sells the seeds to someone else and the pot, the person acquires the seeds through an acquisition that works for real property, kesef shtar chazaka, he can also acquire the pot along with that, because those are metaltalin. Those are property that has no recourse associated with it. So now, the Tosfos over here asks the question that in general, when you acquire the additional metaltalim, the other property that's non-real property, you must say knei, acquired along with the real property or the land that you're having. So if I have the barbecue on the land, I must say acquire the barbecue along with the land. In this instance, does the person need to say acquire the pot along with the seeds? So it suggests that maybe over here you would not need to do that because the pot is so essential to the seeds. Meaning because it wouldn't make sense to sell the seeds without the pot, because then the seeds are nothing, they're not planted anymore. So therefore, when he acquires the seeds, then it automatically will allow him to acquire the pot, if that's what he bought along with the seeds. Now the Gemara says, what about in the other instance? Hechzik ba'atzitz. If a person tries to make a chazaka on the pot, afatzitz lo kana, then even the pot itself he does not acquire. Why? Until he makes a chazak or he does an acquisition that works for real property on the zareim. Because a pot is metaltalim, so the pot itself cannot be acquired through kinyanim that work for real property, since the pot's not considered real property. And therefore, if he tries to acquire it in that way, not only will he not acquire the seeds, he will not acquire the pot itself, because he hasn't done the proper kinyan on the pot. Now the Gemara goes into a continuation, another sugya, which is nikvo ba'aretz. If you have a potted plant again that has a hole in the bottom, that is sitting inside of Eretz Yisrael, v'nofo b'chutz la'aretz, but its branches or its leaves, its trunk and the offshoot where the produce comes out is hanging over into chutz la'aretz. So what's the status of this plant? Abaye amar batar nikvo azlina, and Abaye says we go after where the hole is. Where's the hole? The hole is in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore we say it's yonek, that is deriving its nutrients or its sustenance from the land of Israel. And because of that, this tree will have the status of being a tree that's grown in Eretz Yisrael, b'chayiv and maizrot and trumot, and all things that are associated with kedushat haaretz. On the other hand, rabba mar batar nofo azlinen. We go after the branches or where the growth is, the growth above the ground, where that is, will determine where this tree it belongs. And since that's the case, this tree will be considered as part of chutz la'aretz, be outside of Eretz Yisrael. So Gemara qualifies their machlokas, but vidda ashrush. When we're talking about where the roots came through the hole at the bottom of the pot and the roots are sitting in the ground in Eretz Yisrael, kulei amar lo plige. Nobody disagrees that we go after the roots. Since it's directly drawing its sustenance, it's rooted in the land of Israel, then it has the status of the land of Israel. Ki plige, when do they argue? B'dlo ashush. When the roots have not gone through the bottom of the pot, and it's still sitting in the pot, but the pot is sitting on the land of Israel with the hole in the bottom. Now the Gemara challenges this assumption and says, the ashush lo plige, is it really true? Right, when they rooted into the ground, all the way into the ground in Eretz Yisrael, that people do not argue. I mean, there's no such argument. Everybody agrees that then it's part of Eretz Yisrael. That's not. We have a case. Shtei dinot zu agab zu. So you have two fields that are right next to each other, but they're actually not at the same height. One is above, right, the level of the other field. So you have what looks like a Z, right, if you drew a Z, but not with a diagonal line, but a straight line down. So you have an upper field, then a line down, which is the border, and then a line out, which is the other field. So you have an upper field and lower field, and then between them is a wall of dirt, which is actually the side or the bottom of the upper field. Now somebody planted v'yerech bentayim, and there's vegetables or vegetation growing out that side wall. That wall that is the right, side wall of the upper field, and would be the equivalent of a fence to the lower wall, has some produce growing out of it. Rav Meir says it belongs to the upper field. Why? So the assumption here is because it's growing out of the dirt of the upper field. That would sound like batar ikaro, that we go after the where the rooting is. Rav Yehuda Omer, shel tachton, that it belongs to the lower field. Why? Because the vegetation is growing over the airspace of the lower field. So here you have it. Clearly, these are rooted into the ground, and the ground that belongs to the upper field. And nevertheless, you still see a machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda with regards to what's the status of this vegetation. Does it belong where the roots grow? Does it belong where the leaves are growing? Where it says, over there, hatam kidatani taimo. Over there, the reasons are explicit. The reasons have nothing to do with whether we go batar ikaro, whether we go after the, you know, the rooting of the vegetable, or after batar nofo, or we go after the stems or leaves, the branches, but rather based on what their opinions over there. The Amar Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Meir says in that Mishnah, ma im yirse elyon litola tafaro, right, the upper field, if he wanted to, he could excavate down to be at the same level as the lower field. If he did that, ein kan yerek, then they couldn't plant any yerek. It's only because his field is higher that there's a possibility of having this vegetable or vegetation growing on this wall. So therefore, it must belong to the upper field. And Amar Rabbi Yehuda says, no. Ma im yirse atachton namalot et ginato afar. If the lower field wanted to, he could landfill his field. I mean, they could fill it in with dirt to the point that it was now level with the upper field. If that was the case, ein kan yerek. So that means that it's really the airspace of the lower field that's entitling these plants to grow. And therefore, their machlokas is not about whether we go batar nofo or batar ikaro, but rather about a different issue about who has the upper hand here, who's really one who's being ma'afsher, allowing the ability for this vegetation to grow. There the Mishnah Bo Mitzia continues and discusses the possibility that maybe they have joint ownership, or that parts of it might belong to the upper field and parts belong to the lower field. But clearly it's the question at hand at the Mishnah in Bo Mitzia is about who has more control, who is allowing this vegetation to grow. Now the Gemara says, okay, and it brings another challenge to this idea that if it's rooted, there is no machlokas. Is that really true? V'hatanya. We have a brisa. Ilan miktatu ba'aretz u miktatu b'chutz laretz. We have a tree that's growing partially in Eretz Yisrael and partially in chutz laretz. Tevel b'chulim u'aravim zebazet. They be Rabbi. Rabbi Blue says that in this instance you have a mixture of tevel and chulim, because the part that is growing in Eretz Yisrael is kadosh and the part that's growing in chutz laretz is not kadosh. And since we cannot differentiate which part is which, therefore all the fruits or all the vegetation that's on this plant, on this tree, is going to have a mixture of kedusha and non-kedusha, tevel and chulin. That which is growing on the side of chiyuv in Eretz Yisrael is chayav. Gadol b'patur, and that which is on the side of chutz laretz is patur. So my love, what does it mean that it's partially in Eretz Yisrael and partially in chutz laretz? So that's the Gemara says, maybe it's because miksa snofo ba'aretz, umiksa snofo b'chutz laretz. A portion of its branches and its produce are outside the land, and a portion of its branches are inside the land. So you see, despite the fact that maybe its roots are totally in Eretz Yisrael, that despite that fact, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel believes that everything is mixed up. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel believes that even despite the fact that the roots are on one side, we still go batar nofo. We still go after where the branches are breaking out. I mean, half here, half there, so it can be partially in Eretz Yisrael, partially in Chutzlar. So here we have a case of Nishrash, a case where it's rooted, and despite the fact that it's rooted, right, we still say that the split goes according to the Nof. So that would go against our position before, that once it's rooted, everybody agrees it goes Batar I Karo. So the Gemara says, no, the case here is Miktos Sharashim Ba'aretz, and Miktos Sharashim B'chutzlaretz. Now, it's not that the tree, the upper part of the tree, is divided over the borderline, but even the roots are divided over the borderline. Part of the roots are in Eretz Yisrael, and part of the roots are in Chutzlaretz. So now, the Gemara says, my time with Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, if that's the case, what's the position of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel? So fine, if part of the roots are in Eretz Yisrael, part of the roots are in Chutzlaretz, how do you tell the produce on the top of the tree which side it belongs to? How do you know that it didn't draw its nutrients or its sustenance from the roots that were going to Eretz Yisrael? And how do you know that it's not drawing from Chutzlaretz? You can't differentiate. So Gemara says, the Mapsik Tsunama, that there's bedrock down the center of the tree, and then the tree throws roots to the side of Eretz Yisrael and throws roots to the side of Chutzlaretz. So based on this, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel believes, and we're seeing this in a second in the Gemara, that whichever side the roots go to, that side of the tree, the produce will belong to that part of where the roots are. Meaning that the Rabbi Shimon Gamliel believes wherever the roots go, right, if you have all the roots on the side of Eretz Yisrael, because it's divided by bedrock, then those roots, that side of the tree, they sustain or give nutrients to that side of the tree, and it does not mix up above. And therefore, also the ones in Chutzarts, the roots are in Chutzarts, will also bring sustenance to the side of the tree that's in Chutzarts, and will not mix. But, so now, if that's the case, my time with the Rabbi. What's the position of Rabbi? If the roots are divided, then why doesn't Rabbi believe, like Shimon Gamliel, that it divides straight up the tree to the branches? So Mar says, the Hadri Arve, because the Rabbi believes that they mix again, meaning that the trunk is still a single trunk. So even though the roots are divided clearly, but once they reach the trunk mixes the nutrients or the sustenance comes up from these different roots, and therefore the produce that's on the tree is still considered to be mixed. So my mifligay, this is the argument, Martha Varvira Mabalbel, right, one who holds, it means Rabbi holds, that even though this Misharashim are divided, once it reaches up in, out of the ground, and it reaches into the trunk, to the airspace of the world, meaning then Mabalbel, it gets mixed up again. Once it gets mixed up again, then every fruit or every piece of the produce on this tree is going to have part of sustenance from Eretz Yisrael, and part of its sustenance from Chutzlart. Well, Martha V'haluchudekai V'haluchudekai. And Moshe Omalil believes, no, that once the roots are divided, that remains the fact all the way up the tree. So it's said that the roots of the right side of the tree is in Eretz Yisrael, then the roots of the right side of the tree are in Eretz Yisrael, then the whole right side of the tree is sustained only by those roots that are in Eretz Yisrael, and the left side of the tree is sustained by the roots in Chutzlart, and therefore the division of the roots remains throughout the tree. Now we had in our Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda ben Teira Omer, that Rabbi Yehuda ben Teira says you're not allowed to write a get on Niyar Machuk, paper that was erased, or on Diftera, which we're going to see also is an area, Diftera is unclear, you're unable to determine if there was an erasure on such a document. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Teira says it's invalid, such a document's invalid, because a person can change what was written on the get, because once it's been erased once, you can't tell that it's being erased again. Tosus, on the other hand, points that qualifies this and says, well, that's not necessarily true, because you can tell if something's been erased twice. So he says just here that it's a case where the original document is written on an unerased part, but the edim signed on a part that's erased. So therefore, later on, if someone comes and erases the upper part, it will match the area that has the signatures of the edim. They'll both look erased, and it'll look like a single document. So that's the type of document you can't use. Now Gemara has, Amar Rav Chir Ba'asi Mishmeidu Ula, Gimel O Rotein. There are three types of skins. Matzah, Chaifa, V'diftera. Now what are these types? Matzah Kimashma'o. Matzah is like its name implies, something that has nothing done to it. Just like matzah, we don't add any ingredients, we don't do anything to it. So too, matzah is an ore, the skin, the lomaliach, that was not cured in salt, the lokamiach, and was not cured in flour, the lofitz, and was not placed in gallnut juice. All three of these items were not, it was never tanned, it was never processed in any way. Lamai hilchaso, what is dalocha? What do we need to know about this type of ore? Lotzat Shabbat, to teach us how much of this skin you would have to carry on a Shabbat to be chayav, v'kama shiuro. So what is the shiur of such a skin? K'detani Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda, k'dei latzur mishkal k'dana, in order to wrap up a weight. So in their times when they had weights, right, they used to measure, have special weights that were made, and that weight was used all the time to weigh out of produce or to sell items. Now that weight, if it got rubbed up, or rubbed, or used often, actually would lose some of its weight, and then it wouldn't be an improper weighting. So they used to be careful to store these weights in these special, in these skins, in order to protect the weights from being worn down or used up, so they'd always weigh the same amount. So that's the amount of skin you need. This matzah skin that you would need is the amount of skin it would take to cover, right, the smallest weighting that there is out there. Vakamo, and what's the smallest weighting? Amaraya, kiriva de riva de pumpadita. That's a quarter of a quarter in pumpadita, meaning like 1/16, which was the lowest weight form in pumpadita. You need enough skin to bag that weight or to cover up that weight. That would be considered a significant amount of matzah of that type of skin, and that would be considered carrying on Shabbos. Chaifa, what's the case of chaifa de maliach below kamiach? Chaifa is a skin that was cured in salt or tanned in salt below kamiach, but not in flour, below afit, and not in gallnut juice. So again, what's the law here for? Lo tzat Shabbat. In order how much of this do you have to take on a Shabbos? The kama shiro, what is the amount you have to take on Shabbos? Ketanan, or kadei lasot kamiach. This ore is in order to make an amulet, to cover a casing for an amulet, to carry out on Shabbos. That would be qualified, that would be enough skin to be considered significant, and that skin would be significant if you did it by using it for the amount of skin that could be used for an amulet. Diftera, the last case of diftera, which is the skin that's mentioned in our Mishnah, that Rabbi Matera says is not good to use for a get. The meliach. So what's diftera? The meliach v'kamiach. It was cured or tanned with salt and flour. V'lo afitz, but was not placed in gallnut juice. The ma'ihilchasa. What's the halacha again? Lotzat Shabbat. How much of that skin do you have to diftera? You have to carry out on Shabbos. V'kama shiuro. How much is the shiur? K'dei lichtov alav get. in order to write a get in it, because the Chachamim argue on Yehuda ben Teira in our Mishnah, and they say that it's kosher, you can use diphthera. So since it's kosher to use for a get, that's what it would be, that's its main purpose, that's the main usage of diphthera, is to write gittin on it. And therefore, in order to be chayav for carrying a Shabbos, you have to carry amount the amount that you could write a get on. Now what is missing from here in this statement of Chir Ba'atzi is klaf. Klaf is actually the fourth type of ore, right, that would be meliach, kemiach, and alfitz. It would be cured in salt, and in flour, and in gallnut juice. And we said before, it also was mentioned before, we cured in gallnut juice so that it cannot be erased, and that it leaves, it becomes a skin that is clear to write on and unerasable. So why is that not mentioned in the list here? So Rashi says the reason it's not mentioned in the list here is because it changes its standing. I mean, that once it becomes klaf, it's no longer ore. It's no longer skin. It goes into a new category called klaf. And that new category of klaf is not one of the three types of orot because it's not ore anymore. Tosfos adds in addition to this that actually klaf is different because klaf is what we write Sefer Torah, Tefillin, and Mezuzot on. It's Sefer Stam. We use klaf for stam. And since we use it for stam, it's actually mentioned explicitly in the Mishnah in Shabbos. The Mishnah explicitly in Shabbos says that a klaf, how much do you have to take off, take out in order to be chayv in Shabbos? That's kipay l'ksov parsha ktana shebetfilin. It's right, the smallest parsha in tefillin, which is shema behafto. That's the smallest parsha. So that would be the amount of klaf you have to take out. So since that's written explicitly in the Mishnah, we don't need an explanation. On the other hand, the matzah, chayfa, and diphthera are not mentioned explicitly in the Mishnah. Even though for chayfa, we say that the Mishnah in Shabbos tells us that's used for an amulet. There, the Mishnah in Shabbos only tells us that it's used for an amulet, but doesn't tell us what type of ore, what type of skin. And that's what Rav Asi defines here. Matzah, chayfa, and diphthera, since those aren't mentioned explicitly in the Mishnah in Shabbos, he comes to define what they are. Number one, and number two is to tell us what's the shear for carrying them out, because that's not mentioned explicitly in the Mishnah. Right now, the last issue here of our Mishnah is the Chachamim Machshirim. The Chachamim argue on Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira. They argue by suggesting or saying that even if you write on diphthera, or even if you write on a niyar machuk that's erased already, that is kosher for a get. So you might want to know, man Chachamim. Who are the Chachamim? So Amar. So they said, Amar Rabbi Lazar, he Amar Eidei Mitzira Karte. This is according to Rabbi Lazar, who we've seen in other places. Remember, there's a machlokus between Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Meir throughout Gittin. Rabbi Lazar believes that what? How do you make a get kosher? What's the thing that makes a get a valid get? That is the Eidei Mitzira, the witnesses that testify to the transference of the get from the husband to the woman. On the other hand, Rabbi Meir believes that a get is made valid by the chatumat aedim, by the aedim that sign on the get. They're the ones that make it into a valid get, and the ones that give tokeh to the get itself. So the Gemara is saying over here, our Mishnahs are going like according to Rabbi Elazar, who says that aedei mesira karte. Why? Because we said before in the Gemara earlier on that the aedei mesira must read the get, and since they must read the get, therefore, if there's going to be a change in the get, they will know that something's changed. They've read the get, it was given in front of them, and now if we want to qualify this get, right, we're going to bring the Eidei Mesira over here, and the Eidei Mesira are going to say, well, we saw the get, and we know what was written in it. So that's what Rashi says over here, that if this woman wants to prove or to validate her get in Beis Din, Beis Din is going to call on the Eidei Mesira. Tosfos points out that we only will call the Eidei Mesira in an instance where there's a question about the get. I mean, that there's a possibility that the get was tampered with. Because if the get is not tampered with, then we say, that even Rabbi Lazar agrees that the Eidim sign on the get for Mitzikun Olam. Because if we can't find the Eidim Mesira, we'll be Mekayim it with those that are signed on the get. So it says the only time that we require Eidim Mesira to show up, the actual Eidim Mesira to show up, is when we have questions about the get itself, when there's a question about the possibility that it was forged or something was changed inside the get. But if nothing was changed inside the get, then we can even use the Eidei Chatima. Now, the Gemara is going to talk about qualifications to Rabbi Lezer's statement over here. But in addition, I should add this here, that Rashi says that according to Rabbi Meir, that you can validate the get, right, with Eidim besides those that are signed on the get. Why? Because if you can't find those Eidim, if we find two people can testify to their signatures, that they're valid signatures, then that will validate the get automatically. Why? Because they're signed on the get, and now if someone recognizes their signatures, that's enough. The people who recognize their signatures have no idea what was written in the get, and therefore we're going to validate the get without knowing if something has changed inside the get. So that's why Rabbi Meir cannot be the author of the Mishnah, but Rabbi Elazar can be the author of our Mishnah. Now, Vamar Rabbi Elazar, Lo Yechshir Rabbi Elazar El Alter, Aval Mikan Vadasar Yamim Lo Chashinan. that the only time Rabbi Elazar says that the get is good with Edei Mesira if it's brought to Beis Din on that same day. But if it's brought at a later time to the Beis Din, it does not work. Why? We worry that there was a condition in the get, or there were other information in the get that was erased or forged at this point in time, and we don't rely on the Edei Mesira to tell us what was there, because after a certain amount of time, they're going to forget what was found in the get. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Rechim says, "Afilu mikan v'aser yamim," that even until 10 days, even at a later date, the im ita the havabei tnai midkar dechire. If there were conditions in the get, the edem would remember it. I mean, that's something that in a get, that's something that they would remember. If there was some condition, something left over, that would be something they would have in mind. And then another qualification of the statement of Rabbi Elazar, that Rabbi Elazar, who says edem tsir karte, says that it's okay to write on a document that can be forged or changed. That Amar Rabbi Elazar leikshav Rabbi Zelah begitin. That's only true in gitin. Aval b'shar shtarot lo. But other documents not. Why not other documents? So Rashi says because they kaimi guvaino, that other documents are made for collection at a much later date, and therefore they could pull it out after 10 years. At that point, the edim is here, and they're not going to remember, not going to be around, and we're going to kaim it with the edim that are signed on the document. So since there's a high likelihood that the edim is here won't be around to validate such a get, therefore, he does not allow it by other shtarot. Whereas gitin, generally the woman can take it to Beis Din right away, and they get it validated, and once it's validated, then it's switched from Beis Din, it's vikaron bakol davar. People remember it, and people know exactly or know what happened or transpired at that point in time. Dichtiv, and what's this proof? Proof is from Yirmiyahu. In Yirmiyahu, it says that Yirmiyahu should buy a piece of land, even though the Jews are going to exile and being thrown out of the land of Israel. Right? It's the Minyan of Yoma, since we just began the 9 days. That they're being thrown out of the land, it says that you should place the document of sale, b'kli cheres, l'man yamdu ramim v'ambim. You should put it into an earthenware pot so that it will last for a long time. Why? So that when you come back to Eretz Yisrael, then you will have your property again. I mean, that Hashem is promising them that even though they're going to Galus now, they will return to Eretz Yisrael later on. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, afilu b'shtarot. Rabbi Yochanan says that, Rabbi Elazar, he says, even by regular shtarot, you can use a document that can be forged, because he believes that the Edim Isir will remember that which is written in the document. V'haktiv l'man yamdu yamim rabim. Well, what is he going to do with the pasuk in Riyo? He says, Hatam eitz tova k'mashmalan. She's giving him good advice. Not that it's required to last for a long time, or not that it's required to be in a position, right, where it might be validated with the Edim, but that's good advice, because they're not going to be around for a long time, so they may as well store the document so that somebody will be around, because we don't know if the Edim Isir will be available when they come back. Now, Tosfos over here mentions that he has some questions on the position of Rashi over here. He says that Rashi says that the shtarot don't work according to Rabbi Elazar because they are later made for collection later on. The Rabbeinu Yitzchak, that he says that he disagrees with Rashi. Near the Rabbeinu, it's the time mishum to gzeres hakotufu, that it's a gzeres hakotuf that shtarot don't work. The lo machshir b'shtarot to feel the altar, right? That it doesn't work immediately. The bein and roi lamud ramim rabim. There's a requirement for those shtarot that they have to stand for a long time. Since they have to stand by a long time, Edei Mesira are not going to work in this case to protect you if the document is something that can be forged. And that is what? That is a Gzeirat HaKatuv. And that's how it works. And he also suggests that Rabbi Yochanan might agree here. That Rabbi Yochanan, Yesh Lamar, the Dafu Begitin Kama Rabbi Yochanan, that Asar Yamim Dechire. That people will remember the Edei Mesira can be relied upon for long durations of time, right? That only applies to Gitin. But even Rabbi Yochanan would agree by Shtarot that since would have a lot of conditions in them, a lot of different things in them, that even Rabbi Yochanan would agree that it must be validated immediately. That it won't be puzzle if it's written on this forged type of document, because the Edei Mesira will remember if it's done right away. But if it's done at a much later time, maybe even Rabbi Yochanan would agree that it is invalid. So again, Tosfos just disagrees with Rashi on this one point about why is it that Rabbi Elazar says that shtarot don't work. Rashi says it's because they're only the guvain and they're only brought up much later time. The Tosfos says that it must be a document that can last for a long period of time. And number two, Tosfos says that by Rabbi Yochanan, it's a possibility that Rabbi Yochanan, even though he says shtarot are valid, he might only think shtarot are valid if they are done immediately in Beis Din, validated in Beis Din. But if they're done at a later time, even Rabbi Yochanan would agree that the shtarot is no longer valid because there are too many conditions and too many issues that are left open for the Edim. Okay, we'll stop here.